It's 4:06, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up later, we'll find out about the underground world of mushroom hunting. But first, House Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan released his 2015 budget proposal this morning. The budget, which is called the Path to Prosperity, hopes to balance the federal budget in 10 years by cutting over $5.1 trillion of spending. With me now to flesh out the budget's details is Maya McGinnis, president of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, a bipartisan nonprofit organization that educates the public about fiscal policy issues. Maya, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So let's start with the highlights here. What are the key parts of this budget proposal?
Okay, well, the focus of this budget is basically the same as it was last year, which was the House Republicans wanted to put out a budget that would come to balance over 10 years so that in the 10th year we would no longer be running budget deficits. And the situation had deteriorated since last year. So that meant they had a harder task to do that. I should even back up and say, let's keep in mind that all budgets are political documents and they don't really ever move forward as they are laid out. So in many ways, budgets, whether it's the president's or Paul Ryan's, is a statement of priorities and isn't a very good reflection of what could actually get done. And I would say the same holds here, that this is a statement of priorities for the House Republicans far more than it is that a budget could get enacted. But what it basically does is it has the task of how it would find savings over the next decade in order to get to balance. And as a result, it cuts just over $5 trillion in spending over the next 10 years.
And I understand most of that savings is made possible by the repeal of the Affordable Care Act.
True. By far the largest item in generating that $5.1 trillion in savings comes from repealing the Affordable Care Act. But I should make clear, when they repeal that act, they do keep in place many of the savings that were part of that overall bill. So at the time, what we did was we expanded health care coverage, and that's very expensive. And the Obama administration paid for that through a number of new revenues and reductions in Medicare. Those savings are kept. But the part that expands coverage and pays for it and creates subsidies for the exchanges, all of that is repealed. And all told, that generates about $2.1 trillion in savings.
And other cuts, where do they come in here? Because we've got all of this savings adding up. Some of it is on the back of the repeal of the Affordable Care Act. But what else gets the chop?
Right. So the other biggest pieces of the budgetary savings include block granting Medicaid. And what that means, and this again was in the budget last year as well, it means taking the money that is used for Medicaid, the second largest federal health care program after Medicare, and giving it to the states and capping how much the states would spend. So states would have more flexibility in how those dollars are spent, but they would also have more control and requirements so that Medicaid spending wouldn't grow as fast as it's projected to otherwise. That's the next biggest item. Significantly lower in terms of savings are some other areas, including tort reform as part of health care and some means testing for Medicare premiums so that those who are well off would pay slightly more for their Medicare. Right now, people who receive Medicare in general, overall, the system, get about $3 out for every one that they put in. That's one of the reasons that the system is under such financial pressure. So this wouldn't fix Medicare on its own, but what it would do is generate some savings by asking those who can afford to at the upper end to pay more for covering the cost of their Medicare. Other items that generate some of the savings are increasing federal retirement contributions. Federal workers, generally as their overall compensation package, have very generous retirement plans. Now, that's part of their total compensation, so there's disagreement about whether it should change or not, but that would save about $125 billion over the 10 years. Likewise, the same amount of savings would come from, again, block granting of food stamps, similar to what I was mentioning in Medicaid, but giving more control to the states. Some savings from farm subsidies, some savings from other mandatory savings, and then the two other big items are that we have the sequester. I think everybody's probably heard about the sequester, which is savings in the budget from the discretionary part of the budget. That's the part that goes through the appropriations process every year. Congress decides how to spend the money. It's not the automatic pilot parts of the budget, which are Social Security, Medicare, other programs which we don't budget for. You just get payments if you qualify for them. But the parts of discretionary have been under very severe or strict kind of spending caps since we put in place the Budget Control Act a couple years ago, and then more recently the sequester. This budget would push down on that sequester even more in the out years of the 10-year period. But importantly, it would switch some of the money so that they would dedicate more of it to defense and less to domestic discretionary, which are a lot of the programs people are more familiar with. So science and research and some infrastructure, a lot of investment spending. So they would shift out of that part into defense. And then lastly, there's something called the fiscal dividend, which they count. Normally, typically, that's not counted in budgets. But what this does is they got the Congressional Budget Office to score how much savings would be generated from having a budget that reaches balance. And what CBO, which is a very trusted and impartial analyst in all this, finds is that if you put in place a good debt deal, a debt deal that reasonably starts to control our debt, it actually hurts the economy a little bit in the short run because you're making those tough choices that can shrink the economy. But after a couple of years, it starts to grow the economy. This is called the fiscal dividend, and they count these savings to help them get to balance in the 10-year period.
Now, I want to talk about one of the more contentious things in the budget, changes to Medicare, which includes subsidizing private health insurance for those 55 and younger. Could you talk about that, about where that came from and what do you think it could indicate politically?
Right. So this Medicare proposal, premium support, has been a big part of what Paul Ryan has developed and pushed in the past years of how are we going to reform entitlements. And I should be clear that no matter what people think is the best fix for a Social Security or a Medicare, they cannot be ignored. These are the two biggest programs in the budget, and both of them face serious financial strain. This budget and budget proposals in the House and Senate don't include reforms to Social Security, but it's important to note that this budget doesn't talk about how we should fix Social Security. Couldn't be included here, but you can at least kind of come up with plans. That's something that still needs to be addressed. But they do focus on what changes should be put in Medicare. And the Medicare premium support proposal would basically allow individuals to have more control and choice over how they would spend their Medicare dollars. And they could use that money to buy private plans. And so the argument for it is that it would provide more competition into the system. People would have more choice about the programs they got. And that competition, I think anybody who's familiar with our health system knows there's not much price transparency. None of us really know how much things cost through the insurance markets. But this would help provide some transparency, help control costs. The downside of it, or many people who oppose this, will argue that we don't allow those vouchers or the premium support, the help that we give private families in buying their health care, we wouldn't allow that amount to grow fast enough to keep with inflation so that it would ending up more shifting more costs onto families. Very, very legitimate and strong disagreement about whether this proposal would be good or not. But the main change is it gives more choice to families, more competition into the system. It would be a big sweeping change, and it's not likely in terms of political realities to happen in the immediate future, but it's something that the Ryan budget has included in the past kind of as a way to start having the country talk about whether this premium support or a similar idea would be a good big reform for health care.
Now, you mentioned defense spending, and this budget calls for sort of a beefing up of defense spending right after we heard from the Pentagon various cuts that the Pentagon is hoping to make to the military. Is that sort of the Republican response to that?
Well, listen, there is a song and dance that goes on in Washington every year. It's kind of ridiculous, where the military will talk about the kinds of cuts and places it can come up with savings that it thinks would be sensible, the different branches of the military. And then you see members of Congress going in and overfunding it, funding more than they've been asked for. A lot of times this has to do with jurisdictional or regional issues, I should say, sort of people protecting the money that might flow into their districts or states. So the military is a big budget item. It puts a lot of money into economies, local economies, and it's not always done for the best security reasons. A lot of times you see it for as a way to bring, you know, bring the bacon home to your district. But what the Paul Ryan priority here is, and what their shift to giving more money to defense after the sequester has been taking money out of it, is saying we're concerned that we're not funding the security portion of the budget enough. We need to up those increases. And there will be disagreements and security experts about whether we can afford to spend less on the military. We certainly spend more than all other countries do as a share of the economy. Or whether this is the wrong time. For instance, think about what's going on in Russia and lots of other parts of the world where clearly there are things at risk. This is the wrong time to be cutting back as severely as we are. I guess I say this about every part of the budget, and it's true, big disagreements on this one.
So this isn't a proposal, as you said, that can really go anywhere at this time. It's more of a political document, maybe an expression of aspiration for Paul Ryan at a higher office level. But do you see parts of it coming up again down the road and being picked up on?
Well, I do. I mean, one of the things that's important about the budget is it's very frustrating that when the president puts out his budget or the House or the Senate do, that it's so political and it doesn't lead into discussions of how to put a budget in place. It's worse than it used to be. It's always been bad. The budget's always been contentious. This is one of the areas that the parties used to define themselves. But in the past, at least, it was the beginning of the discussion of how to put in place a budget. And most of the time, the country did. Now what's truly absurd is that this country operates without a budget most years. That is should be terrifying, frankly, to all of us, that we have the world's biggest economy and we operate it without a budget. But the document now is seen as even more political. This year, the House put out the budget. The president put out their budget. The Senate's not even going to bother to put out a budget because, in large part, because last year, at the end of the year, folks may remember that Paul Ryan and Patty Murray, the head of the Senate Budget Committee, came up with a deal, one of the first deals where Republicans and Democrats have agreed on anything when it comes to the budget in recent years. And this deal was to replace part of the sequester cuts, those cuts that are hitting discretionary spending, with some other savings and give us a little bit more room, both in defense and domestic discretionary.
And Maya, I'm sorry, we're going to have to leave it there, but thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, sure. You're welcome.
We've been talking to Maya McGinnis, president of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget.